Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. Joining him is everyone's favorite coach and hair model, Chris, aka Tex McQuilkin, Power Athlete's Director of Performance. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Justin Kavanaugh, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I believe this is our fourth installment getting you on the show, dude. Welcome back.
I appreciate it, man. When I'm welcome back, it's always a good sign.
Yes, and we've had the fortunate opportunity to speak with you all over the world. Probably one of my favorite and most memorable podcasts with you is when you were in the Japan Tokyo Olympics in 2021. Yeah. And you woke up early for us or stayed up late, I don't know. And then we rapped about your athletes' experience and prepping them and just that mental side of the game that we don't get a lot of exposure to, especially on the track and field side. That was a great experience.
What was cool is you got, we were able to do the podcast while we are in the thick of it, right? So with most situations, you guys don't get to see it until the event happens, or you really don't hear the story until if it's a storybook ending at the end, right? Then you could tell the Conor McGregor journey, right? And you could tell this is what it was like during that part of the life and look at me now. But to come back with 3 golds and 2 silvers with an Olympic, year and cycle, while you guys got to understand where my framework was at that moment and where my athletes were, which is really cool, right? Because I can't go back and have that conversation with you again. I'm in a different mental place, right? So the things in which I was dealing with at that moment, they're real. So they're easy to come out because they're authentic. But if I were to try to replicate that conversation, even thinking back, I'm like, ooh, I might have to go listen to that and think about, did I do everything? I mean, it worked out. So I apparently there was some good things that took place and I was okay. But you never really know how you're acting. And I think this comes down to our, the first battle won with a man is self-awareness, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, you're going to be running into a lot of problems. So we talk about the battles with the world, right? So the first battle is, the battle with the world, the battle with one, with someone else, and then the battle with themselves, right? And if you win those battles, you could actually win the war. But the war is actually on self-awareness. It actually starts with oneself. But you don't gain that until you have altercations, interactions with other people, social awareness, right? And then you don't know where things are unless there's situational awareness. How do you respond and how do you act? So I would love to even go back to reflect on how I handled myself. We do this in a debrief, good, bad, or indifferent. We always want to look at how we handled ourselves as coaches. And we do this with our athletes as well. I would say one of the things that's made it more successful looking back on it, is we do what's called a pre-mortem as well. So going into this Olympic cycle, which was my fifth cycle going into Tokyo, you know, we've learned some things, right, over the years. So we're a little bit more comfortable than maybe some of the, you know, younger coaches or younger athletes that haven't been there before. You know, the athlete that you guys, you know, were a part of that journey, one of them was a three-time Olympian. And then the other one was his first cycle. So very different levels of nerves going into it. Also very different levels of expectation. But we do what's called a pre-mortem. Going into the event, we basically sit down and say, oh, guys, we sit in a war room and we have a conversation. We go, shit, we lost. You know, the horse died. It didn't work out well. We like everything went wrong. Why did we die? What happened? And then we list out every possible scenario on how we lost and how something died. What caused it to die? Because we do not want to be a place where dreams go to die. We want to be a place that creates the impossible and rewrites history on sport. I want to rewrite history on sport. I want someone to come to me with a goal that is so far-fetched that is literally impossible for them and everyone around them to believe that it's impossible. And I want to rewrite their history on it. I want to change their record books, but I also want to change their yearbook by actually making a change in their actions today, because that's what's actually, you know, what is in our control. It's where our feet are, right? So we do a pre-mortem where we sit down, how did it die? And we list out everything that possibly made it die. And in that conversation, what we do is we make sure that we go through any possible scenario that could cause a problem to where we don't reach the goal that we set out for. And in that moment, we go, oh shit, I didn't think about that. Oh shit, you know, yeah, that's not likely, but is it possible? And then that's what we do. And we work backwards. So then that kind of creates the periodization model and interject all of the ingredients that need to happen so that, you know, we're not only coming home alive, but we're coming home victorious.
Yeah, that's amazing. The perspective here. So I'm not choking up. I got a little bit of cold.
I thought you were getting emotional, but since you're on camera right now, I literally think that you may actually pass out, which is awesome.
I'm trying to hold my breath, but
talking about dying, you literally look like you're dying.
I'm fighting it, but the perspective, I think it's important that we begin with this and how you think about the performance of an athlete, because it's going on that journey with them, and I feel that's important. And it's also important that we lead off with your ethos, that it is leading. We introduce you as a coach that's working with Olympians. And then you've worked with professional football players, fighters, and then you've given so many kids scholarships. So the expanse of your experience is vast, which is going to lead to our topic of discussion today, which is all about parents of athletes. The world is changing. I don't know if the world is changing, the athlete is changing, or the parents are changing, because some of the impacts and the stories that I'm experiencing at the high school level as a sport coach, it's mind-boggling. So I want to present some cases to you at the same time, like get your perspective, because you've worked with individuals from the top that are at the top and successful at the top. I mean, there had to be some story and experience from the parents that helped lead them there, or they succeeded in spite of some of the actions and activities of their youth.
Sure. So this is an interesting topic, because this is kind of where I started from. I remember the first book I wrote, which has never been published, because I'm kind of, I would say in a lot of ways, like too afraid to put it out there, because I think it's like my life's work, and it's started when I was just getting started, like a documentation process of the work that I was doing, where you'd work with an athlete and you'd have these kind of come to Jesus meetings, but you would work with the parent and you would have to have that come to Jesus meeting too. And they have two completely different life cycles of their athletic or childhood and or parenting development. And that book was called Don't Listen to Your Parents. And the whole concept was around this idea that there's two fundamental truths, right? And there's two fundamental truths for the parent, and there's two fundamental truths for the athlete. And that is, every athlete wants to become independent of their parent and be successful, therefore making their parent proud. And every parent wants two fundamental things for their kid. They want their kid to be independent of them and successful, therefore making their child happy. Now, the root reasons for them, one of them is an athlete being proud to show his parent the work that they've put in, the safety, the security, the opportunities that they took advantage of that. They have the drive to complete it and the willpower, the dedication to pursue God-given talents and the values of their family and do it to make their parents proud. Whereas as a father, a mother, the parents want their kids to do it because we want them to be happy, right? But what happens in that process? As the athlete, and we'll refer to the child as the athlete in this situation, gets older, they start moving away from the parent. And what does wisdom show us? Wisdom tells us that we have experience and time that is beyond the current state of the other person that we're dealing with or mentoring or coaching or parenting. And what happens is when they start getting off the track and they start doing something that is in out of alignment of what they want to achieve, we say, hey, get back on track. But as we do that, what do? We break the first fundamental law, which is independency. So we pull them back in. So the natural reaction that every child has is a rebellion action. And then they have a failure action. And then it's a loop to where that learning loop goes to a certain point. However, parents nowadays have had way more success in an easier life than their parents did, and their parents before them, and their parents that preceded them as well. I'm not saying that it is not different, because they are all going through their individual differences. But universally speaking and generally speaking, I think everybody at a macro level could say that our life today is better than our parents' lives were, and our parents' lives were better than their parents' lives were, all the way back to generations and generations in which our family lines had started. That is just a matter of a fact. So at some point, we have to disattach our feelings from what's going on and understand that because we've had it easier, because we've broken the fundamental laws of parenting and childhood development, we are causing some of these problems because that creates a level of ownership and accountability. Therefore, we could actually change the framework in which we have this conversation. But if we don't change the framework in which we have this conversation, you are going to literally listen to this conversation and be in denial. So if you're a parent out there, you're like, hey, not my kid. My kid's special. Of course your kid's special. My mom said I was special too. She just meant short bus special sometimes, right? And that level of like honesty helped me become a better person and a better athlete. But when we build a world where the lens in which parents view their kids is that they cannot do anything wrong, the kid then does things to the point to get the attention of the parent. And those things are at the level in which they're not able to actually recover from. Mm-hmm. So you got to ask yourself first and foremost, as a parent, do you want your kid to actually be happy? Because if that's the case, they need to become independent of you and they need to be successful doing the things that they want to choose to do. Or is it about you? Is it living vicariously through their kid so that you could fulfill a dream and trauma that you went through when you were younger so that they could live that? Now, I'm not saying not giving them the opportunities that you didn't have. I'm saying living through them, not with them. And if you want to do that, then you're going to cause a lot more damage than any in which you incurred when you were younger. And I know that's stuff and that's feelings right now. That's resentment that you deal with right now. But yet you're actually creating that in your son or your daughter. Mm-hmm. All because you are not willing to let your daughter fail, your son fail in areas where you then could protect them and use them as teaching moments. You protect them and you hold that back so long where they have just enough rope to where they could actually hurt themselves. Yeah. And that's important to understand that you're the one giving them the slack to cause the damage. I deal with this a lot with parents. I'm confident to tell you I probably put more people into college in America through sports than any other human on this planet. And I ran an All-American recruiting camp. I ran literally a program that put kids into college every single year. We put 500 kids into Division I sports every single year for over a decade, consistently, no fail. And then I had advised multiple different platforms that helped thousands of kids do it. Mm-hmm. And there's some factors that are very true across the board. And those are first and foremost, taking ownership of where they are and being aware of where they are. And it starts actually, we think it starts with the awareness, but the first part has to come from the standpoint of saying, hey, wherever I am, I'm okay with it. It is reality. And then you kind of figure out where you fit, and then you can make your decisions from there. But most parents and most athletes think that they're all Americans, but they haven't even made the starting varsity team. So how are you going to jump this gap? Like, we have an awareness gap. And it starts from basically having things that are within a structure, like logically, that says, if I want to get somewhere, I have to achieve these goals. If I want to achieve these goals, I have to do these actions. And if these actions, unfortunately, cause, you know, your kid to become, you know, more resistant to listening to you because you're constantly talking to them, then you got to be okay with that. So the customer journeys and the life cycles of a parent and the athlete are different. And the issue is where the athlete has the most action, the parent has the least amount of confidence. Whereas the parent has the most control, right? The athlete has the least level of autonomy.
Right.
And that gap needs to get closed. Because if it's not closed, what ends up happening is they will never go further than your ability to go with them. And you're in a different place in your life. So you technically are the thing that harms your kid. So the thing that I'm sharing with you as a parent, before we even get into the deeper part of this conversation, is if we know the fundamental truths, which they need to be independent of you and they need to be successful, then you have to understand that the first stage of being independent is going to be making some mistakes because they have to learn to deal with them. But if you literally control every step of the way and you don't like let them fail, you are going to cause them to fall so hard that you'll never be able to fix them when it matters. And they're going to resent you the rest of your life. And that's something that you'll never get back, because you can never get back time.
Boom. Yeah, I imagine it is tough, you know, from first walking up into 11, 12, 13 years old, sports, it is such a connection between the kid and the parent. Because you're going to Little League together, you're traveling together, you're at the car rides between the soccer tournaments. So it is special together. But then about middle school and high school for some, you hand the kid off to a professional coach. You know, it's no longer dad pitch. It's to the middle school hired teacher coach. It's to the high school football coach. So at that moment in time, the relationship, it changes. And it becomes this awareness and independence in which you're speaking of. I think a lot of folks are just holding on to that time, that moment, and maybe the pre-game or post-game conversations they had with the coach, who's also their friend and neighbor. They're just wanting that within the sport coach now.
So what you think about when you look that up, right? I think there is one job that a parent has that is more important than anything else in regarding their kid to be successful. And that is to put them in an environment that is successful. Your job as a parent is to be, you know, a chess player in moving the pieces where your kid is going to thrive. That doesn't mean take them out of environments where they failed, though.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are, I say them, but then they're taken out of context. If you take your kid out of environments where they're always failing, then you'll never get them to learn how to overcome adversity. But if you put them in environments where they are set up to succeed, they will thrive. Environment always wins. No matter what you talk about, you could say whatever you want, environment always wins. This is why we have such success with second generation pro athletes, because they are immediately adopted into an environment that has shown them all of the things that you need to do in order to be successful, and eliminates all of the things that cause them to not have the success in the area in which they want to achieve. So the first thing is, as a parent, are you evaluating the environment you're putting them in? And then are you evaluating their skill level in which they are in an environment that is attached to their skill? So as your son or daughter develops greater skill, do you put them in an environment that could progress their skill? Or are you putting them in an environment that you want them to be in with the big ass logo? It's the best team in the area. And yet their skill isn't up to that level. And they're now in the bottom of the pack because that made you feel good. And then now that suppresses their ability to learn, that makes them unexcited about actually showing up because they feel like they're so far behind. Or you want them to win everything and you put them in an environment that's so low that they're the best kid there because it makes you feel good. but they don't actually get better. And then when they actually go to a, when they get excited and they want to go do something with their life, they get into a real environment and get their teeth knocked in. So environment is the first part of it. The second part is the skill and making sure the environment and the people, the coaches, the setup is directly correlated to the stage that they're in with their skill. And then it's their will. Do they have the will to actually take the opportunities of both the environment you put them in, the skill development process and expertise that you've provided for them to achieve the goal in which they want? But what do we do as parents? What do we do as coaches? What do we do as adults? We judge athletes every single day based upon their will. Mm-hmm. Does this kid want it bad enough? What's their will? Even though their skill isn't up to, you know, to par for the current state that they're in and their environment isn't successful. So whose responsibility is that? The kid doesn't know. It's your job as a parent. That's the reality. Most of the time, the fish are not sick, the water is dirty. Most of the time, the things that are in the environment are not conducive for you to be successful. So you as a parent need to stop working that kind of triad backwards. You need to stop looking and go, oh, my kid doesn't have the will, and you constantly get on them about will. You constantly get on them about working harder and pushing and doing these things, or why isn't this a certain way? Because when you're doing that to your kid, you're the same parent that's making an excuse to your friends, and you're the same parent that's complaining to the coach. Yeah. And you don't think your kid knows that? So here's a fun fact for you. If you don't think your kid knows how you treat other people, you are clueless. Yeah. And if you don't think that's going to affect the way your kid treats those people, then you're even more in denial. So you need to be tough and loving with your kid so they are tough and loving with other people. Unless those aren't the values that you want to, you know, instill in your child. I'm not here to say which one's right or which one's wrong, but at some point, if your values do not align with mine and I'm in a coach and I'm creating an environment, then you're just not going to jive with me. But in most cases, the parents' values based upon their actions are not in alignment to the organization and what they're in. That also means that if you're in an organization and the values of the organization are not aligned with the values of your family, get your kid out of that environment, because that's going to instill whatever values that they're doing on a regular basis. So that is up to you too.
Yeah. The environment is everything. And you know, within sport, it's limited from 2 to 6 to 8 hours a week at the college level, even the amount of time that they get to spend with the sport coaches. So it's interesting, you know, the home life has so much weight, but then the parents tend to narrow the focus on the problems on these 2 to 8 hours as the reason for some of the problems and behaviors that they're seeing. I find that interesting as well.
If your son is an asshole 22 hours out of the day, he's disrespectful to you, he has no appreciation or respect for authority, and you expect him to actually, you know, be successful in sports, you are literally, you know, in denial. And when you are operating with a level of insanity that you think that your kid is going to be able to just flip a light switch, go into that environment and then listen to his coach, right? Then you're even more crazier than I thought. Because the truth is that kids are great at mirroring behaviors. So whatever they see, they're going to start to do. The problem is they did that way before they got on the field. They did that years ago. So how are you acting now? That's a real question. If you don't like how your kid is operating, it's probably because that's the way you operated. And the things that you don't like about your kid are more likely reflections on who you are as a parent. Now, that doesn't mean you're taking all the blame. You know, I think that there is a level of accountability, but part of that is like working with them because it is a family. Mm-hmm. So the way I like to look at this is the gap between where a kid is and where they want to be, right? So you look at a kid and you basically say, hey, here's where I am. This is where I want to be. What are the actions I need to take to make that gap? There's obviously changes that need to happen. Now, what's interesting is the pain of that gap needs to be big enough to make a change. If the pain in that gap is not big enough, they'll just make the change momentarily. If the gap is not big enough and they feel like it's like easy grabbable, they'll just procrastinate it. They'll just push it down later. So you need to make sure that they're constantly in environments that are challenging them, but they're constantly in opportunities for them to be successful as well. Right. So I'll give you a personal example. When I was younger, I played Optimus football. Right. We grew up in an area in Dade County in Florida that was pretty good with sports. It was pretty rough. And I went to the club program that my brother played at, who was 3 years older than me. I was the best football player the first day I put pads on in that environment. I lasted less than a week, and my dad put me in another environment. He goes, oh, you go play right here. Well, why? This sucks. He's getting my ass kicked. Is because he wasn't about to put me, who actually had this will to kind of work and kind of goal to kind of be the best I could be, in an environment where I wasn't going to get better. But it was still a safe environment. But it put me in a situation to where I could make progress. Because for me to be the best, I didn't have to work that hard at that other environment. Mm-hmm. So I just started to kind of lower my standards. But in order for me to be average in that other environment, I had to work my ass off. And then later on, you know, I ended up becoming one of the guys at the top of the pack. Our world works on a bell curve. And you got to decide, where do you want to be on that bell curve? And then you have to make decisions for that. And the issue with that is right now is that when you're not self-aware, right, then you then have a problem with where you stand on that bell curve. And you're judging yourself compared to another athlete who may be doing things very differently than you, but he's been in it longer. Circumstances are different. He might have a different skill. He might have a different ability. When you have a organization that you're working with your kid for 2 hours a day and there's 22 other hours, like you were mentioning, you may only have 8 hours a week or 10 hours a week of them, you know, impacting your kid. When you're going into a school system, which today is very different than when we went through school and very different than when our parents went through school, which is very flat, meaning that you talk to your teacher as they're your equal on a regular basis, meaning that when you go in, instead of it being Mrs. Johnson, it's Susie. Hey, Susie, how's it going? I would get smacked, not by my teacher if I called my teacher that, but by my parents all through my career. That's just the way it works. And because we've created a flat line, flat level leadership environment in schools, because whether we believe of them as leaders or not, they are leading our children. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in the best direction that we would advise or want, but they are leaders. Unfortunately, they don't represent the leadership in which I want my kid to have the qualities of today. That's why we have to be very particular and very much smart about where we put our children in certain environments. But when you have a flat level leadership structure and the kids feel in which they're on the same level of the authoritative figures, you've lost the respect for authority because there's no accountability. Mm-hmm. And when you have no accountability, we can't make progress. So this is what you're running into on a regular basis. And then with that comes one of the biggest problems with parents is the delusion of feeling like their kid isn't getting a fair shot. They're not getting a fair shot because they do not have certain things in like actually dialed in. They do not have the fact that their kid has good grades, doing the right thing, shows up on time, is always prepared, getting progress, you know, the making progress like you should. Sports and in life, they're not very fair. Their circumstances are always situational and environment based. So if I have an athlete that does nothing wrong, he's never out in trouble, he's never done anything wrong, he's always doing what he needs to do, and then there's an opportunity for me to put him in there, I'm going to give him that opportunity as a coach. But if I have another athlete who screws up every once in a while, but he's a game changer for me, he literally could help us win the game, you guys as parents think that it's the wrong thing for me to do to put him in. Well, we need to put our kid in a position to be successful. So as coaches, that's our job. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to have standards in my program, because if not, then that kid gets out of character to our organization completely. And when he's operating without the values and the standards of our organization, of our team, then he could go do whatever he wants. And if he wants to just go fuck around and then come back, right, and help us win a championship, and we allow that, then we've created the standard that fucking around is okay. And that is a huge problem in today's society. So I have to hold that kid accountable and hold him to a specific standard so he doesn't get so far away, because he's going to drag the other kids that don't have the ability that he has and the bandwidth that he has to make those mistakes down. And when they drag them down and I try to hold those kids accountable, as parents, you interrupt that process as controlling the situation, because you won't let your kid have that independent failure. And when you do that, when you interrupt that discipline, you start a whole nother cycle of how that kid views that parent, because you've cut the legs out of that coach from an authority standpoint. Yeah. And you don't think that that kid's going to do that to you as a parent? You're creating the problem.
Yeah, in line with that, another problem we're running into is parents speaking out against the coaches and informing their kids not to listen anymore, to not buy in. And that is completely out of line. But now I see the big picture you're painting here, that they're essentially creating now it's okay to push back against an authority figure, which eventually, you know, that will be aimed at them. And then what are they going to do?
So what happens with that is, as a parent, if you tell your kid to do that, don't listen to authority, they're technically saying, don't listen to me. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, if I'm the parent and I'm saying, hey, don't listen to that coach, don't listen to what he says, don't listen to that authority, I'm basically saying anybody in that authority position, don't listen to. And over time, that becomes me. Because then I just put a hat on, take a hat off, put a different hat on. Right? But I want you to listen to me when I'm coaching you, son. But then, like, I got to listen to you at the dinner table. But I got to, like, listen, you know what? You should have, like, understandings of environment as a parent. That is your job. But any parent that tells that to their kid, when the coach has the kid's best interest, I'm not saying the coach is perfect, but don't worry. I've seen some coaches that are very malicious, and I want you taking those kids out of that environment immediately. But before you tell a kid, don't listen to a coach, take them out of that environment. That is your job. Your job is not to tell your kid to not respect the position. I would much prefer that you teach your kid the ability to respect the position than respect the person. Because if respect is deemed based upon the way you teach your kids nowadays, which is, I have to respect you before I listen to you, I have to respect you before I listen to your authority, bullshit, that's going to get your ass in trouble. So you need to respect the authority, and then you got to figure out a way so where that authority doesn't even need to be spoken. Meaning a coach should be able to just look at a kid and go, come on now, you're better than that. And they know, because they respect him. In the beginning, that coach might have to say, Mike, what the heck are you doing? Are you kidding me? Listen, I've said this 3 different times. This is the way I need this done. Let's knock this out. Or I'm going to put your butt over there. And then that evolves into him respecting the relationship dynamic between the athlete and the coach, to where he just says, hey, you know what to do. Go take care of it. Mm-hmm. And then 2 minutes later, that your kid goes scores a goal that puts you guys in the playoffs. All because 6 months ago, your kid hated that coach because he was chewing him out. Your kid now got your kid into your team into the playoffs because 6 months ago, that coach looked that kid in the eye and said, hey, we ain't going to fight this battle. You're going to do what I tell you to do the way I'm going to tell you to do it, or you're not going to play for me. Mm-hmm. But when a coach gives the kid a little bit of rope, just a little bit, guess what the kid's coming back for tomorrow? A little bit more rope and a little bit more rope. And then when that kid ties themselves in a knot and they're all, you know, can't go anyway, so, and they're in a straitjacket anymore and they're handcuffed tied, and then you go in as a parent and you want to save the day, now we have a problem. So if you're going to be a parent that's out there basically telling a kid, don't listen to your coach, your job as a parent is to take them and put them in a different environment. Because as you do that, you might as well tell your kid, hey, son, I'm going to be honest with you. Mom and I right now don't have the ability to put you in a different environment that is better for you. So I want you to act out of integrity in order to get what you need done in order to make this thing work. So when that coach says that to you, you don't have to listen to him. It's okay. I got your back, but not really completely. Only in this area, because if it ever hits the fan, I kind of can't do my job as a dad. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If I told that to you parents when you were interrupting my practice, I think you would actually handle yourself differently. But if I promise you, if I had a parent that said a damn word to a kid, good, bad, or indifferent, in the middle of a session or the middle of practice, I promise you it's going to be a little different conversation than what you guys are probably used to dealing with. And it's because those coaches don't have, you know, something between their legs that give them any level of confidence that they're going to have that conversation with the parent is probably one of the biggest problems. Because they've had their freaking legs cut off and nuts cut off in the school system in different environments and the way that you operate every single day, all because mom and dad work at a company that makes tons and tons of money. Who gives a crap? I'm helping your kid become more successful in life so that he could then do what you're doing and going beyond that, but also through the power of sports, mm-hmm. which is an even platform. There's a place for everybody. You could pick a sport right now that you could become the best in the world at by putting your head down and working to your ability. Maybe you're not going to become, you know, Michael Jordan, but you may be able to figure out badminton, or you may be able to figure something out. And it's not even about sports. What happens if it was about, you know, playing an instrument? This is why I tell parents there's things that you should be teaching your kids. I try not to give like blanket advice of like must do's, but there's things that as a parent at a younger age, you should be requiring your child to do. So the first one is read. You got to teach your kids how to read. And again, coming from, you know, my mom was a teacher, my dad was a firefighter and a teacher at the college. Reading was something I'm not good at, right? And I learned like, oh, why is reading important? Reading, basically, you start to hear your thoughts. You start to see it. It's very self-regulating, right? Number two is, and there's no faster way to learn at this level than read. You could accelerate and collapse time at the same time. In a matter of a moment, you could collapse time because you read someone's 10 years of knowledge in, let's say, 10 hours. So the first one is read. The second one is learn a second language. Because as you speak, if you're speaking in a foreign language, you are hearing yourself think. And that's developing micro moments of confidence because you're insecure about the way this sounds. And then as you do it more often and you get more comfortable, you develop an ear for it, and then you develop a voice for it. And what ends up taking place is you start to develop internal confidence within your own mind. Right? As an individual, this is beyond sports. This is life. And then number three is play an instrument. Talk about like instant feedback, right? If I grab the saxophone right now, you know, and I didn't, you know, put my lips on it the right way, and I didn't, you know, have my fingers in the right spaces, and I was all over the place, I'm going to be able to quickly have an understanding if I'm making music or I'm making noise. Right. And the art, right, of music is taking basically the science of it, right, the notes in different positions, and putting it and formulating it together to where it goes from noise to music. And I could articulate that with both what I do from a movement standpoint and a breath standpoint. And it's self-regulating, because a person that knows when they hit the wrong note or not. But it starts with anyone that's ever taught anybody how to play an instrument, or anyone that's played one, knows that those early stages are painful. Not many people in this world just grab something and it's just beautiful right out of the gate. Not many people are just going to step on a piano, watch somebody and go, you know, I can figure that out. There's going to be some kind of, you know, nails on the chalkboard sounding moments, right? And some crazy, you know, drums being played that have no beat to them, but a bunch of noise. In the early stages of making music, but it's self-regulating and it's very much confidence building. And the last thing is play a sport. And I ran track, but playing a team sport is critical because it teaches you what it's like to have someone else's back. If I miss a block in football, I could get somebody hurt, right? If I go out of my way because I want to go and do something that's different than everyone else outside of the script of the play, not only can I get somebody hurt, I'm going to miss the block and it's going to be me. It may make someone else look bad to the public, but to the people that I care about, it makes me look bad. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if I miss a block and that guy gets crushed, maybe the audience sees that I miss the block and I look bad. But as a defender, if I go flying down the field and I miss my assignment, right? And then someone else gets burnt, the audience goes, oh man, that guy got burnt. And then my teammate's like, what the heck, man? And that internal accountability teaches you how to handle social dynamics. Mm-hmm. But we are, as parents, removing our kid from those environments as you know, unfortunately, very quickly. And that auto-regulation to where they could do it on their own and then adjust is important. But what takes place is you interrupt the failing process. And instead, when you interrupt the failing process, you hold them up. You hold them up so they don't fail. They stay right here. And then they stay stagnant and they die. Versus let them fail, but let them fail forward. And you're earlier, the better they are to fail, they learn how to fall. When you learn how to fall, you learn how to get up and you move quickly and you don't get hurt doing it. And then when you learn how to fall, you learn how to forward roll. And then all of a sudden you could build some momentum and you could start stacking some of these wins. And now all of a sudden your kid is very confident and he doesn't need external validation in order to like feel good about himself. But when you play the victim, it will always come back to haunt you. When you play the victim, when it's everyone else's fault and you don't know why, and you kind of cry wolf about all this stuff, what ends up happening is you're going to never go anywhere. And it's unfortunate, but that is just the reality of life. And it's the reality of sports.
Awesome. Can you speak to the difference between professional and then this developmental, this high school level skill development? So another critique received was it is, practice is not enough of this professional style approach, not enough lacrosse versus, you know, the fundamentals, the breakdown and the skill development, understanding that we have limited time in high school. So each rep counts. So there's this emphasis. And then I spend a lot of time within the dynamic warm up instead of a routine that's the same every day. It is just basic GPP development of skill on skill for speed and change of direction. Yeah.
So this is interesting because parents and external people viewing things from the outside and looking in, they're constantly like, well, that's not like what the pros do. We should be doing this and doing that. Like, all right, what were they doing at your son's age? Because isn't that more important than what they're doing now? You want your kid to be here. He's here right now. That guy is what you want your kid to be like. If your kid does what that guy is doing, isn't there like a gap that's jumped? Or would you rather be doing what that guy was doing at that age? The reason why the fundamentals, right, are the most important is because it's the thing. If you cut off all the rest of the word, it's just fun, F-U-N in the beginning, because it's really, really fun to play the game. If you have sound fundamentals, it's really, really, you know, not fun. It ain't not exciting at all if you don't have sound fundamentals, because you can't catch, you can't pass, you don't know positionings, you don't know the rules. And immediately you're going to make the game painful. So in order to make the game fun, the first and foremost thing is you have to have fundamentals. And you're taking fun out of it. Whereas parents from a view outside looks at it and go, oh, this isn't fun. They're just working on fundamentals. They're just the basics. No. That's what makes the games fun. Mm-hmm. What makes the games fun is that your kid could pass, shoot, catch, move up and down the field, triangulate people, work through defenses, work up a line, listen to what the coach has to say, understand the rules of the game, see what's being thrown at them in a way that is so fundamentally sound that your kids could run circles around the opposing team who only wanted to dick around in practice. Except you as a parent don't want your kids to do anything but have fun because you're 12, not your kid. That's the problem. Your immaturity is the reason why you are pushing that level of like coaching onto your kids and your kids' coaching. Not because your kid's not enjoying it. Your kid's not doesn't know any better. Your kids are like, oh, we're going to do this again? No, it's because you probably said that. Mm-hmm. Your kids don't know any better. They're with their boys. They're having a good time. They're just in practice. And yet you're the one who's basically saying, oh, they're going to do that again? Why don't you do these things? We got to get you with this guy to do this stuff. Well, a bunch of stuff doesn't matter. If I handed you a 5-pound bag of shit, right? Or a 1 literally pound brick of gold, which one would you want? A lot of shit or the brick of gold?
Gold.
Well, that parent wants a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I don't care if I don't have a lot of weapons, but if my weapons are going to like beat the opponent, that's all that matters. It's the, what's the Bruce Lee quote, you know, don't fear the man that learned 10,000 kicks, but fear the man that's done one kick 10,000 times.
Yeah.
right? And as a parent, you know, we want our kid to look cool and do all these things. He's never going to get the opportunity to do all the fancy tricks and cool stuff if he doesn't know the rules of the game. So first things first.
Oh, yeah, and part of my argument, even for the warm-up, is the right. We have the fundamentals of shooting and drop whatever sports skill you want in there. But then the basic warm-up, I take the fundamentals and break them into the fundamentals. Squat, step, lunge, planes of motion. So just get really good at each individual body part. And then the skill work and practice is just bringing those all together as an individual. And then we have the complexity of, you know, an opponent, you know, one-on-one, and gradually build up to six-on-six. But if we were only playing, like, the truly fun stuff of six-on-six and just running around in circles, they may be having a good time, but we're not getting any better.
Yeah, I think that as a coach, one of the KPIs that I look at, right, and I'll just give you some insight to my, you know, my personal and professional level of coaching. When I evaluate coaches and programs with athletes, I look at rate of progress. So I have to ask myself, if I'm in that environment and I'm responsible for that kid to be at a certain level, what is their rate of progress going to be? If my rate of progress is slower than the opposing person, then I'm not doing as good of a job, right? If I'm involved and the rate of progress is greater, then I'm doing a better job. If I'm not involved and the rate of progress is slower, then obviously I should step in. So what is going to make an athlete better? Is that the parents? Like, is that their parents' profession and they know best? Or does the person that, you know, has had experience? Now, you played lacrosse, right?
Yeah.
College. Have you played at a level in which kids want to aspire to get to? Yes. Have their parent?
No.
And yet, they probably never even picked up a stick and don't know what they're doing.
No.
And yet that's where they're getting their advice, not from the person that is in the position and has done the thing that their son aspires to do. That's where I have a problem. I have a problem because, as you know, as a parent, you are interjecting yourself saying, I want my kid to do it this way because I think this is what's best for him, even though I've never achieved that. And you have somebody that is like willing to show you the path and the way to get your kid to where he wants to go. And has been there, and you think you know what's best. Listen, if you think you know what's best, get them in a different environment. But then once you're in that environment, back your ass up, let them do their job. So one of the biggest hiccups that I see in parenting is car rides home. And the reason why is because kids dread them. Soccer practice, soccer game, lacrosse game, football game. And the best piece of advice that I could ever give a parent regarding car rides is have the car ride twice. People are like, what? You want me to go through that much hell? I said, no. Before you have that car ride, have it in your head. What would you tell them? How would that make them feel? What would you say? How do you think they're going to respond to it? If they shut down or they want to put the music on, then that's going to tell you a lot about what's going on in your kid's head. Or are they going to open up a dialogue with you? What is the goal of the conversation that you're going to have in the car ride that is the outcome that you enjoy versus the one you don't enjoy? Are you saying this for you or are you saying this for them? Because if you're saying it for them, they're going to talk a lot. If you're saying it for you, they're going to shut down. Mm-hmm. Which one is it? Is your kid talking more after you start the conversation or are they talking less? And by the way, if they're yelling at you, that's not proving your point. I mean it the other way. Meaning if they're excited to have that conversation with you, right? If you get into a shouting match, then you're probably not, you didn't hit the right button. But if you're having that conversation and your initial sentence that opens up the dialogue turns into you talking 10% of the time and them talking 90% of the time, you won as a parent. If your initial sentence that opens up the dialogue shuts your kid down, you lost. So have the car ride home twice, once in your head and then once again, because 10 years from now, 20 years from now, that car ride is going to be meaningless. So you're better off making it actually meaningful by getting them excited to do more of them with you. But they're going to start saying, I'll just catch a ride with someone else. Or they're going to get 16 and be like, I'm just driving myself home. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to say, hey, mom, dad, can you come with me to the game? Can you come to the game and then pick me up? Can I go here with you after? Those are going to be exciting moments for you as a parent. But you're not setting the stage right now when they're 14 or 15. So that when they're older, you do that. Or you've already missed that boat and you have to kind of pull that. You got to like reel that line in a little bit. And if you're reeling that line in right now, then you're probably over indexing. And that's probably why you say, don't listen to your coach, because your kid comes home and says, oh, my coach did this, this, and that. And then you just jump on it. Now's my chance to fix all my mistakes that I made for the last 5 years. Let me just tell my kid that he's right and the coach is wrong. And now we're going to win him over. You're not trying to win your kid over. You're trying to make him a better man. Mm-hmm. That's the mistake you're making. So that's the stuff that I see. And unfortunately, most parents, they'll make the same mistake 50 times. Now, we're not perfect. I get that. But at the end of the day, you should know if your kid's shutting down or not.
Yeah. And there's only so many high school games before then you set them free out of the house to really make some mistakes out there in an uncontrolled environment.
Yeah, I was going to say, you hit the nail right on the head. You go from an environment in which you could control to an environment that you have zero control over. The only time that you have control in an external environment later on in their life is when shit already hit the fan. When it's too late, unfortunately, there's a lot less that you could do. So I would rather you actually do that now.
This final question here. What would you say to parents that, I wouldn't say the relationship is spoiled, but they've never even tried? You know, think about the old school tough guy mentality where, you know, fathers don't hug their sons. What's a way that a relationship like that went, you know, 13, 16, 18 years could now start off of, you know, putting them in a position to open up about how they were feeling, the competition, the love and the connection that you feel, but then you maybe haven't had the balls to reference your book to express.
I think one of the most powerful things a man could say to another man is, I love you. And I think one of the most scary things for a son or daughter to believe is that it's not true. Right? So if they have any of those doubts, it's because you haven't showed them. You've just told them. So if you're struggling right now, it's probably because your son or daughter is watching you and they don't believe you, because your actions aren't necessarily aligned with the words in which you are saying. And when you tell your kid that you're proud of them, that's very, very different than showing them that you're proud of them. So excitement comes, right, from a state. What state were you in? The other thing is, if your expectations of them is not equal to where they want to go, to their ambitions, right, there's going to always be conflict. So I don't ever want you to let your kids settle. I actually want you to push your kids. I think most kids, in my experience, you know, over 20 years doing this with the youth market, most kids crave discipline. And most people do not believe that they could achieve a goal. Believing in them and then giving them discipline to actually hold them accountable to achieve that is magical in the end. I had a kid that I trained for 11 years. His brother was an All-American stud. His brother, absolute stud. I ended up training his brother all through high school as well, and all the way even in through, you know, college and getting ready for the NFL as well. And the youngest one, the baby of the bunch, right? The kid that just hung around, got drafted third round this year in the NFL draft. Last year's Major League Baseball draft, I had a kid that hung around, just was around the environment for 10 years. His older cousins, his older, you know, siblings and the people that were in his life all played college baseball. And guess what? Second round, he gets drafted. That's incredible. All because somebody did not strip them of their dream, and they put them in an environment that it had you know, in alignment with the values of both their family and the things in which they wanted to accomplish. It's amazing what could happen if you just believe in people. Don't strip somebody of their dreams, right? I'm not telling you to be delusional, but don't strip somebody of their dreams. And the easiest way to do that and show somebody that you believe in them is actually hold them accountable to their actions based upon what their goals are in their life.
Mic drop moment. Thanks again, Coach Cav. If people want to learn more, follow you, and continue to get these nuggets of wisdom, where can they head to?
I'm probably the most active on Instagram, Coach Cav, K-A-V. There's also a website which is for mainly for a lot of our pros, but you're welcome to reach out. It's athleaguehq.com. So just athleaguehq.com. And our, you know, easiest way to really tell me what like stood out is, you know, go to the, you know, Power Athlete Radio podcast, leave a review of the things that you learned. Don't even say I was so great. I could care less about that. Make sure you leave a 5-star review because the podcast is awesome. But in the review, don't just say the podcast is great. Write what you learned because that is something that's going to stand out. You do that, I promise you, you know, that will get you a lot further in life too, because I think it will help everybody.
Sweet. Thanks again, man. A pleasure as always. Looking forward to more of these conversations, dude. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.